Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today, we bring to the ADV microphones once again, Mr. Jay Hess. Now, welcome to ADV again, Jay.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and it's great to be here.
Last couple of programs, we were talking about the late, great Dr. Revelo Pendleton Oliver, and you had expressed to me an email a desire to go further into some specific quotes of Dr. Oliver's that you did not have at hand. You also described yourself as an Oliverite. So expand on that, if you would.
Yeah, I consider myself an acolyte of Dr. Oliver, and sometimes I refer to myself as an Oliverite, and the man is just one of the greatest geniuses. And I wanted to give a little flavor to the audience of what his writings are like, because they really are so good. And I happen to have one issue of the Liberty Bell, Populism and Elitism, from September 1982. So these are all quotes just from one article that Dr. Oliver wrote. One quote that I really like is, "A competent theologian is like a ventriloquist. He can make his God say whatever he wants." And I know Dr. Oliver had had written in other articles about the in ancient times, the ancient Greeks and Egyptians used to have their gods set up in a vestibule. And there was a priest that sat behind, hidden behind the vestibule, who would give answers to the petitioners who came before these gods. And I believe that's somewhat how the art of ventriloquism began, from these priests that would put the words of their gods into the gods' mouth.
Well, I think it takes a little bit more skill to be a Christian theologian then, because the pagans didn't have any quote unquote inerrant holy books. They, you know, their legends and myths and stories of the gods and goddesses could be told by bards or poets, and they could change from generation to generation, even from place to place. They could be somewhat different, and they could be creative, but the Christians have this holy book that's inerrant, supposedly. So it really takes skill to draw out the desired meaning from it. But I guess if you're competent, you can do it. I guess the one great thing about the Jewish Bible is it's, from their point of view, is that it's full of so much nonsense and so much that is contradictory, that if you're very careful and do a CNN-type job and just do selective reporting, you can make it seem to say almost
exactly
anything.
There are so many contradictions in the Bible that you can pretty much make any argument you want, finding some quote within the Bible for or against any topic at hand.
Well, Dr. Oliver distilled that down to one sentence.
Exactly. And Dr. Oliver also was always very critical of the public school systems, and he had many different very sarcastic descriptions of it. Sometimes he would call it a brainwashing factory. But another quote from this one article, and here it is, quote, "Public schools are a terrible machine for inculcating the most bizarre and noxious superstitions and deforming the minds of children with what amounts to infantile paralysis of the cerebrum."
Well, I would just say that in response to that it's so unjust for white Americans to have to, of course, have no choice in many cases economically, but to send their children to public schools and have those schools teach their children to hate their own race, to hate their own culture, and to openly embrace the destruction, the dilution, the replacement of their own people in what should be an institution that is the bedrock of support for the nation and the people, the public schools. But on top of that, not only that, which is horrible, but they have to pay for it and pay more and more and more every year. There are some people who, bought homes a few decades ago where the property taxes were trivial, just a few dozen or a few hundred dollars a year. And now the local government, and it's mostly public school expenditures, are demanding tens of thousands of dollars per year. In fact, some people are simply forced to sell out, sell their houses, and either become renters or move far away. And this is to support this brainwashing, this indoctrination of their own kids. I tell you, I'm amazed that there isn't more of a boiling rage in the people who are subjected to this. Maybe there is, and I just don't hear about it. But it seems like most people pay their taxes meekly and say little.
Exactly. And also, many people do not want to have their children go into one of these public schools where it's basically like submerging them in a sewer of filth with all the multiracial elements in there. Kids are scared to go into the bathroom. They'll have their phones stolen, their lunch money stolen. So some parents will opt to put their children into a private parochial school. So then they've got to pay double. They've got to pay for the public school, and they have to pay for a private school.
And many, many, many parents simply can't do that economically, too. They want to, but they can't. If they didn't have to pay this huge tax to support the brainwashing factories, then they could get together. They could pool their resources. They could start a school. But most working white Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, and they just can't even consider something like that. They can't do it.
Yes, indeed. And also, Dr. Oliver was very critical of Christianity, as I am, too. I find Christianity to be just a wild superstition. And here's another quote from Dr. Oliver. "The Christian God is a sadistic and insane beast that created human beings whom he destined for damnation so that he could enjoy torturing them forever."
Yeah, I think people of European ancestry are horrified by mistreatment of, well, animals or children or any living being, really. We are disgusted and horrified by it, and we hate to see it, and we would fight to stop it. And yet, here we're supposed to worship this God, this Jehovah, this Old Testament Jewish God, who created human beings who are, as Dr. Oliver says, some of them, if they don't follow the prescriptions in Leviticus, Numbers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to the letter, are destined to be basically burned alive or boiled alive, tortured forever. Of course, you and I know that never happens. That's just complete nonsense. But if you take it seriously, that is what is taking place. And apparently, the supreme architect of the universe is perfectly okay with that, and so we should be too. I think that inures people to torture and cruelty and turns them away from their own nature. I don't like it.
Neither do I. There's more psychopathology and masochism in the Bible than in any other place, I think. And here's another good quote on that subject of psychopathology and masochism in Christianity. Quote, "Normally intelligent men had fits in which they lashed their backs with whips weighted with lead until the blood from their excoriated flesh flowed down over their trousers. They imagined that Jesus, if he happened to be watching, would be pleased to see them torture themselves. confident that Jesus will be so pleased that he will assign them specially luxurious quarters in the best apartment house in heaven and make them members of his own exclusive club.
Total insanity. You also have people I've heard about who interpret the Bible in such a way that they feel it is anti-sex and that sex is sinful, and so they, you know, castrate themselves to please Jesus. It's just complete lunacy.
Exactly, total insanity. And I think Dr. Oliver was specifically talking about the Jesuits and the Opus Dei cult within Catholicism when he was talking about the self-flagellation that some of these adherents would undergo.
Very, very weird. I myself, I don't remember in the Lutheran church in which I grew up, I don't remember anybody advocating that. And of course, you know, that there's always selective reporting depending on which sect or cult of Christianity you're a member of. They have different things that each one emphasizes. So I never got that. But I do remember being in Sunday school, being in church, and being in confirmation classes, and seeing these Jews. They didn't really look like Jews. They just looked like white men, but they were all wearing Middle Eastern type of robes, ancient Middle Eastern type of clothing. And they had, some of them had shepherd's crooks, and they were, you know, in various places in the Middle East. And these people in these Middle Eastern robes, these, and we were told they were Jews, God's chosen people. They gave me the impression, I think they gave all the other kids in the classes the impression, that this is our history. This is us. I mean, we never were told we were Jews, but we were told that this is the important thing to learn about the past. And, you know, obviously we didn't descend from them, but as far as what was important for us to know about the past, this was it. This is where we spiritually descended from. And I think so many people were shown these types of images and read these scriptures and said, maybe not in so many words, but this is where we came from. This is us. This is our history. This is what we should remember. And didn't really get much of the real history of our people at all. That was completely ignored. Or if anything, it was denigrated as the evil pagans or the evil Romans. Of course, all through the Christian Bible, the Romans are depicted as evil. And they were, you know, white Europeans. So, you know, it's a very, very twisted worldview that the kids get, that I got. And I'm so glad that Dr. Oliver helped me liberate my mind and my spirit from that.
And same with me. And it is, I find it very liberating to read stuff like, to read Dr. Oliver's great wisdom and insight into what is the truth and what is reality. Like, for instance, that his description of the psychopathology and masochism in Opus Dei. I mean, that's a perfect example of how insane that Christianity can be. And it really is, you know, when you get into subjects like transubstantiation, where...
oh, yeah, does the bread really turn in to Christ's body? And does the wine really turn into Christ's blood? I understand wars have been fought over disagreement on that point.
Yeah, they argue relentlessly about crazy things like that, and the Trinity. Is it monotheism or is it polytheism? Do we have just one God or is God three? But mm-hmm. The theologians managed to do some intellectual gymnastics to make one God into three or three gods into one. It's just crazy.
Or the Christian identity folks who claim that the Jews aren't the real Jews, that we're the real Jews.
Yeah, you know, I have a soft spot for the Christian identity people. I mean, they're good people. They want to do the right thing, but unfortunately, what they've got, it's not reality.
Oh, sure they are. They are good people, I think. I think the mainstream Christians are good people for the most part. Nothing I'm saying should be interpreted to the contrary. There are people in my family that I love very much who profess Christianity, but I think we need a better religion.
I do too. And, you know, there's an analogy with, let's say, the Aztecs and the Mayans, who were very intelligent people. They had a good, great understanding of mathematics and astronomy and understood natural laws. Yet they believed that if they sacrificed people, if they ripped the heart out of the beating heart out of a living human, that would somehow please the rain god Chakmul, who would be pleased and bring rain to the Aztecs and the Mayans. And I look at Christianity somewhat like, or the Christians that believe these crazy superstitions along the lines of the Mayans and Aztecs, who were normally pretty rational people, but still had these very odd, perverse superstitions.
Well, when I hear these different sects of Christianity arguing over their completely contradictory interpretations of what certain verses might mean, it always comes to my mind. It's sort of like people arguing and trying to base their lives on, what was it that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer really said? I mean, what did he really mean? You know, it's nutty. And I think a lot of it is merely due to the fact that kids are exposed to this stuff at an early age. And I think even before I was talking about when I was a grade school kid, but I think it really starts earlier than that. If you expose children to Christianity at preschool age and say, you know, have the parents whom the child instinctively reveres say, this is what we believe, this is what we are, this is what we do, and this is where we came from, that will make such a deep impression on most people's mind at that early age that it establishes tracks of thought that your train of thought runs on and can never get off for most people. It's right in there with like the idea that down is down and up is up. No amount of logic will dislodge it from the true believer's brain. But I'm not saying there aren't some people that break away from it. There are, but most can't.
Yeah, and I think I just happen to be one of those people who was not easily indoctrinated in anything. I had my questions about Christianity, maybe when I was back to 12 years old, I had my doubts about everything. And one of my friends pointed out a significant fact, and that is that pretty much everyone who follows a religion, whether it's Christianity or Mohammedanism or Judaism, I mean, you basically follow the religion that you were born into, that your family had. No young person is given a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, do you want to be a Christian or do you want to be a Mohammedan, you know?
That's true. Well, maybe it has to be that way. Maybe a long time ago, before the development of universal religions, that most religions were tribal religions, and it was simply a device created by nature to bind human tribes together with a common set of beliefs that, you know, we're social beings, but we're not as social as the ants where everything is perfectly coordinated. We're fractious and we disagree and we fight and we have revolutions and we have all sorts of conflicts, much more so than other social beings. And so we need something to point us all in the same direction. All the members of our tribe need to be united on certain things, or we'll just split apart and then we won't survive. And so nature provided that.
I believe it's all about social cohesion.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it is.
I mean, that's the evolutionary function of religion, to provide a cohesive framework within which the whole community could work together. Going back to Dr. Oliver, Dr. Oliver was one of the greatest classical scholars. He could read, the original works in Greek and in Latin, and he was very familiar with the contemporaries back 2,000 years ago when Christianity began. And Dr. Oliver came to the conclusion that it was all just propaganda and nonsense. And we had mentioned a book called The Christ Myth by Nicholas Carter, which I highly recommend. I mean, I believe that book is correct. And basically it makes the case that Jesus was a completely mythological figure that did not exist in history at all. And Nicholas Carter makes a very compelling argument for that, and I believe it.
Well, that's a book that is certainly worth reading and considering. I know Dr. Oliver himself was of the opinion that the stories around the Jesus figure were conflated from a number of different figures, some of which may have had an historical reality, but if you take them in totality,
like Mithras,
they're not.
Like the cult of Mithras is very similar to Jesus, and there's so many other. I mean, the cult of the Egyptian god Osiris. You know, there's just so many examples of how Christianity borrowed from some of these other ancient cults.
You have culled the quotes you've given me so far, and maybe you have some more, but you've culled them all from just one issue of Liberty Bell from 1982.
And there's one other quote from this one article, and this is on World War II. Quote, "The European nations had not yet realized that they had defeated themselves as catastrophically as they had defeated Germany in 1945.
British Empire rapidly came to an end, and the integrity of the United States, its borders, its founding race, its culture, also not quite as rapidly, but still rapidly came to an end after World War II. Very, very true.
The European people were the undisputed masters of the world, and after World War II, we just turned it over to our enemies, the Jews and the non-whites.
I remember what the maps used to look like. I love old maps. I was born in 56, but I like to have and collect old atlases, maps, globes, and of course study them on the internet too now that we have the internet from long before I was born. And I have an old globe sitting right here on my desk right in front of me right now. And I don't know the exact date of this globe, but it's right around the time of World War II, I think. And it's a beautiful thing. The oceans are depicted in black, which really makes the colors of the countries really stand out. But what's interesting to me is they colored the entire British Empire in red all the way across the globe, the entire French Empire in green all the way across the globe. The Dutch possessions all were in orange across the globe. And it's just amazing. Just those three countries' possessions alone took up a huge percentage of the Earth's surface. And what a different world it was then. That whole world just turned to dust after World War II. So Dr. Oliver is so right.
Yes, he was.
We'll continue this important interview next time on American Dissident Voices.